No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote.
Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People the Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. Along with my co-host, Kathleen Gomez, we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. So join in the discussion by calling in at 888-627-6008 or Skype us at BBS Radio 1. Now you have to spell out the word one. We've had a few problems with this in the past. So it's BBS RADIOONE. Tonight, we hope to have a return guest, Mike Miller. Mike is not in the studio at this time, and he's just running a little late, we hope. But if he comes on, we're going to discuss what's going on in Ferguson, Missouri, as Mike is a resident of Ferguson and was on our show last year to talk about the unrest following the killing of Michael Brown. We hope to have him on the show again tonight to talk about what's changed, and also discuss the new unrest that has broken out over the last couple of weeks. But if he doesn't show, we're still going to discuss it because Kathleen has just come back from St. Louis herself, where she was visiting her alma mater, Stevens College, where she reminisced about the good old days with her roommate Susan B. Anthony as they fought for feminism in the Midwest. It Abigail Adams or Susan B. Anthony?
Betsy Ross,
that was your roommate. Betsy Ross. I know that's not true because you can't sew.
I can too. I have been doing knitting. I have been knitting Afghans.
Oh my God.
Yes. Can you imagine? Afghans, you know what the Afghans are, right?
Yeah.
I
can't wait to get one for Christmas. That says,
what are they?
You know, shadow politics, live free or die. We put them on the bed.
Yes.
Right?
We cover them.
They're like blankets.
Like that's right.
Yeah.
So,
my crazy wife.
But now your crazy wife got me started because we were living around you. We had to do something with our hands so that we didn't start using knives. That was the whole point, using the needle.
I remember you slapping me a few times. And so I'm glad that you found a useful use for your hands.
No, it was interesting. I went 40 years ago, actually, to about the same point in time of the year. Excuse me. I was going to Stevens College, which was in Columbia, Missouri. And the only reason I went there is because I had been accepted to schools in the East Coast because my dad didn't want me to stay in Arizona, didn't want me to stay in California. So he said, you can go anywhere, but you got to go, you know, go to the East. And then one of my friends said, oh, my God, it's so horrible out there. It's so cold. It's so snowy. And you're going to freeze. And the people aren't very nice. And it's just awful. And I kind of went, oh, no. And then my mom said, well, go to Stevens. And it was an all-girls school, all-women's school. But one of the first to actually teach, offer a class in women's studies. And my father was very upset because it was a finishing school. You know, you were supposed to go, and in the 60s, you'd go with your gloves and your hair had to be done. You had to wear stockings, and you learned, you know, how to be a woman, a Stepford wife. And it was known for that. And, but when I went, it had just started to be hotbed of feminism, and, you know, remember the famous book Our Body, Ourselves, and you know, it was about not wearing makeup or bras or doing anything that would make you attractive to the opposite sex, because you were just wanting to get back with the earth, and the heck with mink coats, and the heck with all that stuff. So it was interesting. It's and I was looking for my dormitory, which was new at the time, and to find out that it had been sold off, but I ran into the president of the college, a young woman from Kansas City, actually, and I talked with her. So it was really interesting. I remember a lot about that time, and you know, Columbia, Missouri, and Missouri University, and so it was good. It was kind of neat to walk back in time 40 years ago. Gosh, it doesn't seem like it's
well.
Been that
let
many
me
years.
First. Let me first say to the people of Stevens College and the new president, if their objective was to turn you into a Stepford wife, they failed.
Well, that was the point.
They didn't do a good job.
No, in the beginning, that's what it was known for. It was known as a finishing school for young women to put them out there in the world. You know, not necessarily to get married, but to be good secretaries, or maybe to get involved in business or the theater or stuff like that. But it was to give you the skills, you know. And but my dad didn't realize that that was the 60s, and by the time I went in 75, it was all about women's liberalism and, you know, experiencing everything that women have to offer. Although, you know, I mean, a lot of us were little sisters to a couple of fraternities, too, in Missouri. So, you know, what can I say?
Well, I want you to know, because I know you know that I'm a liberal, that my primary focus of study when I was in college was also women.
I studied
women. And even though I never took a woman's studies course, I did what I would call independent study of women. That was my primary focus.
And I don't know if I could say this, but I remember Our Body, Ourselves was a book. And actually, Stevens College was one of the first to offer a degree in women's studies. You know, I mean, that was something that was unheard of. And I remember one of our assignments was to take a mirror and look at ourselves, you know. That was really interesting.
Right.
For a young Catholic girl coming from a Mexican border who's been told, oh, don't look down there. No, nothing happens down there.
Mean,
you know, you got to be
go
when
blind.
You're married.
go blind. But I know Kathleen very well, and I'm glad to say she only looked until she needed glasses. She didn't wait until she went blind.
Anyway,
move on, because we're digressing quickly, and Don is going to cut us off the air if we go any further.
Okay.
Let me just say there are no new sponsors as we talk about D.C. statehood. There are no new sponsors for the new Columbia Admissions Act this week because the members of Congress are still at the beach and doing their barbecue thing, still on vacation. So that might explain why the country's running so well these days, because they're not here to screw anything up, but they're also not here to endorse our legislation. So we hope they come back quickly and follow John Oliver's lead and start standing up for the rights of all Americans, including the people that live in the District of Columbia. And while we're on the subject, let me say that people listen to John Oliver, and they not only people, but the pandas. If you went on John and saw John Oliver's piece on D.C. statehood, and if you did not, you should go onto the internet and punch in John Oliver tonight, this week, and D.C. statehood, and you'll see a wonderful segment on D.C. statehood, which was 17 minutes long. But on that segment, Oliver encourages the pandas in the D.C. zoo to mate, and the good news is that yesterday, the female panda in the Washington Zoo gave birth to twin cubs. Now, this morning, they announced that they're taking one of the cubs, and zoologists are handling it separately, but because for some reason, even though the cubs are really tiny, pandas tend to only be able to deal with one cub at a time. So they're going to let the mother raise the first one, and the second one they're going to raise by themselves or with the help of zoologists. But anyway, thanks for listening to John and having a few babies to make us all happy here in the district. And also, I want to take this moment to do a shout out to three American heroes. You know, I'm sure you read, Kathleen, or heard, yes, about the shooting on the train in France, about the terrorist that was on the train, and how three American soldiers that happened to be on that train stood up, took charge, disarmed the man, and beat him unconscious. And he had a whole sack full of automatic weapons and all sorts of stuff that would have probably resulted in the death of many, many people on that train. So to Spencer, Alec, and Anthony, you make me proud to be an American. Thank you for standing up, and thank you for protecting me, Kathleen, our children, and all of your countrymen. It really makes us proud. Our military makes us proud every day. And I just want to point out that the guy that tackled the terrorist, Spencer Stone, had a broken arm. And he did it anyway, because that's what these guys are made of. They're made of steel. And so thanks, guys. You know, for a job well done. I know Obama has thanked them, and the president of France has thanked them, and the ambassador has come out and thanked them, and we should all be very proud of them tonight.
Yes, definitely. That was, you know, it's something that people really don't know the United States, and I think it's something that it always bothered me when I worked for Pat Schroeder on the Armed Services Committee, all these status of forces agreements that they have with Germany and countries over there that the United States has to, you know, to have a base and all that. And it's amazing how much a part of the economy the American bases are to a lot of these countries, and how a lot of them really don't treat the American soldier very well. When you have to go overseas and you may be an E5 or E6 and you're living out in the community because there's really no housing and you want to bring your family, you know, you have to supply everything, the light bulb, the commode, the refrigerator, the lighting fixtures. And so it is really great to see, you know, and maybe make Europe realize how much, you know, they rely on us and how much we come to their aid every day. And, you know, I always was amazed by the kind of, you know, like on some bases, you know, 60-70% of the people have to be locals, you know, national locals there. And they don't understand how to give advice about, you know, moving from Germany to Nebraska or something like that. And so I just think sometimes that Europe doesn't understand how much they depend on us and how much they need us. So maybe this will bring more of a human face to it too.
Yeah, and certainly we appreciate these young men. And what I think is just unbelievable is that, you know, this all happened and they reacted the way they were trained to react. They had, you know, they were on leave, I believe, all three of them. They weren't there assigned to do anything. They just saw the need to stand up and take action, and that's exactly what they did. And you know, Americans have been doing that. I know that what you just said, Kathleen, is also true, unfortunately, in our country sometimes, that we don't appreciate these people enough. But they're doing today what they've always done. I come from a military family. The brave men and women of this country have always stood up and always protected us. And sometimes we take that for granted, and it's just a terrible thing. We should never take it for granted, because, as they say, freedom is not free. Somebody pays a cost for it, and if you don't pay the price, somebody else has paid for you, and you should always respect them and the work they do. So, to Spencer, Alec, and Anthony, thank you for being the brave men that we know that all the people that serve our country men and women are. And again, it makes me proud, and everybody should be proud.
It's interesting because they said it was really kind of fate because they were in another car. And the only reason they were able to happen and stop this was they gotten up to go check the Wi-Fi in another car, and that's when they came across this guy. So
yep. Yeah. Well, I think God intervenes at times, you know, and puts you in the right place at the right time. But it's not only about being in the right place at the right time, it's doing the right thing when you're in that place. And these guys certainly did that. So let's talk about what's going on in America. Ferguson.
Well, let's talk first about Donald Trump.
About Donald Trump. You know, if we start to talk about Donald Trump, we may never get off the subject, because how amazing is this? I think this is all tied together, by the way.
Yeah.
You know, that 30,000, I think it's scary that 30,000 people showed up for his rally in Alabama. 30,000 right. people. You and I have been in politics a long time, Kathleen, and when have we seen 30,000 people show up for a candidate?
Not very – not too much. Not too many times. Before
we go any further, can I just say one thing for our boss, Jimmy Carter? I'm sure that I speak for you as well as me in saying that our prayers go out for him. If you haven't heard, America, President Carter has cancer and it's spread to his brain. And I'm sure that he will be brave as he always has. And there are differing opinions on whether he was a good president or a bad president, or not a great president. But I'll tell you what. He is a great human being, and I'm proud to have worked for him. And I think
it was interesting. It definitely showed that, you know, outsiders, when you're an outsider, it's very difficult to run the country. You know, and I remember all those guys that came in, and you know, they were real outsiders. They didn't know how to work within the system. You know,
right? They used to call them the Georgia Mafia. Remember?
Exactly. So it's funny how at that time it really was kind of, and maybe it always was. But if you're not an insider and you don't play the inside game, it's very, very difficult. I mean, I think the people really put him into power because they voted for him. It was a grassroots president, and yet it showed how difficult it is for someone from the outside to be able to do that. You know, and it was sad.
So is that what's going on now? They elected Jimmy Carter because he was an outsider? And is that why Donald Trump is so popular, because he's an outsider?
And yes, definitely. And I think the other thing is that he doesn't do any of the political correctness. And people everywhere I go, people are so fed up with it. Because it seems that it's gotten to the point where, you know, it affects everyone so much that they can't really live their life because they're so afraid if you do this in the school and if you say something to a kid, your kid says something to a kid, if he kisses her on the playground, he can go to jail for sexual, you know. I mean, you let your kids walk down the street and you're, you know, that's impossible now. I mean, you know, the family, right. Remember from New Jersey or whatever, who taught their kids how to walk home. I mean, I think of what I did with Mateo and Diego. I made them ride their tricycle and they would take off and they would be zooming to the, and they knew never to approach even the curb, but people would freak out and I would probably be thrown in jail because I was endangering their lives. And I made them walk to the hospital by themselves and to the police, you know, station. I follow them, but I'm sure that would be considered, you know, the same kind of stuff. So I think that's what it is, that he's an outsider. He doesn't need them. And he obviously, it's funny though, because he's part of the problem. He says, you know, yeah, I paid everybody off. I gave every politician money and they owe me favors and that's the way it works. And I played the game. That's what I have to do. Yeah, I took, you know, 5 bailouts from the government because everybody else takes 5 bailouts, so why shouldn't I? I mean, I think that people are just so thirsty for something that's not the same old stuff. And, you know, all those other guys look like the same old politicians right next to them. They look terrible.
Well, you know, and I think you're right. I think that even when he says stupid things, and let's be honest, this man has said some profoundly stupid things. But yes. Even when he says stupid things, people are saying, you know what? At least he's being honest. That's who he is. That's who he you know, he's not trying to homogenize everything. He's not trying to pasteurize everything before he says it. And we're sick of that. And we have so much of that in politics, you know, that we don't want to offend anybody. So we're not going to say anything. And in the end, the people and who demand this of us and the news cycle, you know, the 24-hour news cycle that demands it of us, then they come back at us and criticize us for not saying anything. And it's true that politicians don't speak their mind enough, and they need to be more courageous and stand up. But let's not be saying the crazy stuff that Donald Trump is saying.
Well,
you know?
No, but I think that everyone, he says what everyone thinks. Let's get to the really tough stuff about the border. I mean, he says what people are thinking. And that's refreshing to people. That's the connection. You're thinking like I think. You understand how I think. You know, politicians don't have that connection anymore with people. They don't understand. They talk a talk that is so, I don't know, like a different language, and people just can't connect to them and identify with what they say. You know, and I mean, I've told you, I have, you can hear it and see it in D.C. It's very prominent, you know, and it's just not reaching to the people outside of that beltway and not connecting with them. So it's
strange. Yeah, but you know what? He may be doing that, but again, he's bringing out racists. He's bringing out people that it's not a matter of you know, him just saying these things. It's a matter of him playing to the lowest common denominator. And you know what? That, although it's been some time, it's not an unusual thing in American politics, right? We had Eugene McCarthy, and he came out and he fed on the fear of communism, right? And he ruined people's lives by doing this. Trump's just, in my opinion, just a new version of McCarthy, and McCarthy was wildly popular for a while. You know, so I don't think, you know, I always think of one of my favorite politicians was a guy named Huey Long from Louisiana. And Huey Long used to say, there's 100,000 Frenchmen in New Orleans, and New Orleans has a Frenchman everywhere. Your house could burn down, your baby could drown, and not one of those Frenchmen would care. And, you know, he played on the racism that people had because the French in New Orleans were wealthy in those days, or the people of French descent. So I think Trump is doing this. And, you know, the thing that I find unusual about it is the people that are supporting him, they got nothing in common with this man. What man, what person that goes to that rally showed up in a helicopter?
Because you know why they also like him, though? Because he's got money. Because he doesn't need to go to the Koch brothers or the Zoros or whatever. He's got his own power base, which is money. And the thing is they like the fact that he's making everyone else squirm. All the politicians, everybody else, you know, the journalists, he's got them just squirming. They can't believe it. And you know, it's funny when you look at him have a one-on-one with Jeb Bush. He is dynamic, and Jeb Bush looks like a bureaucrat. I mean, right? And then he says this stuff like, you know, with the border security stuff and sending back everybody, right?
He's going to send back everything. They just said the other day that 13% of the workforce in California are undocumented.
Right.
People. But you're not going to be able to get an orange or a grape or any produce of any sort if we do that. Well, you know, not to mention other things.
But he was right, and I thought it was a very low figure when he said that 300,000, there are 300,000 births a year for undocumented, you know, for parents of illegal or kids of illegal immigrants, and he wants to banish that. And, you know, I mean, I can understand it because I have seen, living on the border, just jumping the fence and whatever you can, coming in for the day or whatever, to have your baby born in the United States. I mean, we would have people arrive at the ER, and we're a hospital, you know, that little hospital that closed up just a couple of weeks ago, closed its door after 105 years, because of the cost of taking care of these people who come across illegally, and then you don't get paid by the government, yet you have to treat these people. What do? I mean, we can't deliver babies. We don't have everything to do that, but when they come in, we end up having them birthed in the ER, and it's costing. Then we have to airlift them at $25,000, and so you keep on doing that two or three births a day, you know, you're out of business. I mean, he has some valid points that need to be addressed, and he says it where other politicians don't want to say that. They don't want to tell people the real numbers because it might frighten people. I mean, I can't tell you how many people we've had come down to that area in Douglas, McCain, and I mean everybody, and then they think they have the answer. They go away. They spend 2 hours maybe and leave and still don't say anything or say what they would do. This guy is saying the thing that's going to put kind of like the fear into everybody because you got to imagine that Hispanic community or Latin community would be, you know, not wanting to support him. But it's interesting. I mean, you got to also think where these polls are being done and who's doing the asking and what's the market too, right?
That's true.
I mean, it could be all white people that he's calling too. You know, the polls are doing.
Well, that's right.
Right?
And that's absolutely right. And those results will I think be skewed, and it's an important thing to point out that you have so many candidates at this point. He really doesn't have a majority of support. He just has more support than the other candidates. And it's funny to me that you've got this guy who I think's a racist. I mean, come on. You know, some people say, no, he didn't say Mexicans were bad. He said, you know, the Mexico was sending some of the bad ones, and that's probably true. Well, BS. He said Mexicans were bad, and he was playing to the lowest denominator in my estimation. But it's funny because you're right. There is something else there because look at who's the second place candidate is among Republicans. It's an African American.
Right.
It's Carson. He's in the second spot. So it's not just about racism, because if it was, you certainly wouldn't have him number one and a black man number two, I think. I think it's about other stuff, too, and I think you're very right. And I think that, there is something there. And I personally believe, and I want to take a break at this point, but I personally believe that Bernie Sanders is kind of the liberal personification of the same sentiment, not the same politics, but the same feeling that people aren't getting what they want and they want somebody outside the box. Because even though Bernie certainly has the experience in the Senate and other things, he's certainly not your typical not your typical Democrat. So when we come back, maybe we can talk a little bit about him and some of the other Democrats out there.
Well, Hillary's not going to make it. Let me tell you that. Come back and find out why.
What happened to the feminist from Stevens?
I don't want the first woman of being president being someone that I think is a cheat and not an upstanding person in her own character. So I don't want that to be the first president.
What happened to the feminist?
Just because she's a woman doesn't mean I have to support her. I mean, just because she's a woman, I'm still very much, you know, I think the ERA not being passed is something that every woman should just drop everything and work on it to get it to go through. So, I mean, but I don't like Hillary. So there we go.
Let me tell you something. America, can you hear this? That's the Democratic Party tearing up Kathleen's voter register.
That's fine by me. Cut me off, Democratic Party. The hell with you and the Republican Party.
Well,
go for the populist movement and independent. That's what I am.
Well, we're going to take a short break while I deprogram Kathleen, who's obviously been taken over by some political cult while she was visiting her old alma mater. And we'll
That's
be back.
That's right.
And we'll be back in a minute. But here's an oldie but a goodie by Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers. And this goes out to our three American heroes, Spencer, Alec, and Anthony. Back in a minute.
I won't back down.
Right. That goes out not only to Spencer, Alec, and Anthony, but it also goes out to Kathleen. Because I tried to get her to recant some of the things she said during the break, but unfortunately, she won't back down either.
Right.
So.
And I think a lot of people feel the way I do. I mean, I think Hillary just looks awful. She obviously did something wrong, whether or not everybody else before her did it, who knows, but I mean, you know, you gotta stand up, and she's just looks like a nasty, mean old woman who's bitter, and you know, will do anything it takes to win, and will have anybody of her people do whatever it takes to win, and you know, that's not a good manager, that's not
Come
a
on.
Good person.
You know, there's gotta be some liberal Democratic women out there that want to call in and argue with Kathleen. I haven't given up on Hillary yet. As a candidate, but I think she's got a lot of problems. I'll agree with you. You know, if I was a gambling man, I wouldn't be putting my money necessarily on her. And you know, I had a fight with her in Denver when she said that she thanked everybody in America, basically, for their support. But she didn't thank the people from Washington, D.C., who gave her money, and many of whom supported her. Because, in the end, Obama won the primary here. I was an Obama supporter. And I supported Obama, I got to tell you. At the time, I liked Obama, and I wanted to support him. But for me, it was an easy decision because my constituents voted for Obama. And I thought, you know, the people of Washington, D.C. want Obama. My obligation as a Democratic, I was a superdelegate to the convention, was to cast my vote for Obama. I could have cast superdelegates, as you know. Kathleen can cast their vote any way they want. They're not right. They're not tied to the candidate the way regular delegates are. But when, you know, 75-80% of the people that you represent vote for a candidate, I think as their representative, you have an obligation to support that. So I certainly did. But come on, you liberal women out there. Call
well, you
in
know, I think there are so many women around that are also tired of it. Who I've seen on Facebook say, I don't want to support her just because she's a woman. Because isn't that part of the freaking problem? That everyone supports a candidate when they don't feel they're the best, but, oh, they're gay. Oh, they're a woman. Oh, they're black. Oh, they're a conservative. Instead of really seeing what character these people have and looking at their history and seeing what they've done in the past, you know, we just get caught up, and that's part of the problem. And a lot of women, I think, are saying that we shouldn't just support her just because she's a woman. I don't think that's enough reason to be a president. And you know, we may have, or I'll take the heat. I've seen up close the people who work with her. I've seen up close what she will do for anything. And I just don't want to have those people running the country. Even though everyone will probably tell me, oh, well, if it's not them, it's someone else, and they do the same thing, well, you know, I know of it, and I'm not going to go for it just because, well, everyone else you know, commits that kind of thing, you know, or that doing the wrong thing for the right reason. Isn't that always a great kind of phrase in D.C.?
Well, I agree with you as somebody that's a very good campaigner, and I should point out that you were my campaign manager in the last election, and we both did a really good job with no money and very little support. We almost won. But as a campaigner, I can tell you that I agree that the most powerful thing you can say when you're out on the campaign trail is that I'm like you. I'm a woman. I'm a veteran. I'm a union employee. I know what it's like to be without. I mean, we hear it now, even from the Republicans, who pass so many laws against working people. But then we have people like Rubio standing up there saying, I know what it's like. My dad was a blue collar worker. You know, I grew up without. I understand what it's like to be without. So I think it is a really powerful thing. And I think that you're right about just the fact that you're a woman, or that you know, you worked for a union, or that you were. I say it all the time. I when I talk to union people, I say, look, I used to be a Teamster, because I used [S2] Right. [S1] To be a Teamster. You know, I think that just for those reasons, I agree that that's not enough. But it is a really powerful thing to say. And that's why, for example, after the Second World War, the vast majority of Congress for 25, 35, 40 years after the Second World War were veterans, because those brave men and women had gone overseas and saved the world. And they thought to themselves, you know what? If the guy's a veteran, he's a good guy. So, yeah, I think we need more than just who you are. But who is Donald Trump? And who are we going to bring in on? You don't want Hillary? Who do you want? Joe? Is it Joe Biden and Elizabeth Warren? Is it Bernie?
Although, Joe, I don't know about Joe Biden. I mean, coming in with Elizabeth Warren as the vice president wouldn't be a bad idea, you know, but I'm not sure Joe Biden is the guy that I would want to be a subman. I'm not sure it would be Bernie Sanders. I'm just amazed how there's just nobody in the Democratic Party to look at. There's just really no leaders that I can see. If they are, they're really old. They've been through this thing again, and they don't look any different than everybody else. And they don't look much different than the Republicans.
Well, yeah, don't say that just about the Democrats. Who are the leaders in the Republican Party?
Well, true. Well, you got 13. I mean, at least you got the woman. What is the woman who ran Hewlett Packard? You got her. Is it Fiona?
Fiorina.
Fiorina.
Oh, give me a break with her.
What's wrong with her?
She has no political experience.
Don't you think that's what people are like looking for? They actually want to put somebody there who doesn't have any political experience, because they think that's going to make the difference. I mean, you know what happens when you don't have political experience? The whole place shuts you down. You know, the Republicans and Democrats will join together on that one issue and shut you down. That's what they did with Carter. But that's what people think. And I mean, if I am looking, I'm thinking at least, you know, she's a woman. She ran a huge company. I mean, politics isn't everything you do. She didn't have to run for something to know what the political world is like.
Oh, wait a second. Now you're talking out both sides of your mouth. I don't want to elect just a woman because she's a woman, but she's a woman. You know,
well,
I mean,
talk about supporting a woman of the fields who are running, I'd rather go with her than Hillary.
Well, you know what? When you talk about experience, look, man, if I'm going on an airplane, if you want to fly me somewhere, I'm not going to accept the fact that you're a sailor. You know, if you come to me and you say, look, I sailed the biggest ship in the Navy. I don't care. I want you to know how to fly an airplane. You know,
but then
sailing the aircraft carrier doesn't take a lot of brains and expertise. And
the maybe other side of that.
But I want you to know how to fly.
The other side of that is when you have a captain or sailor or wherever he is in the middle of whatever, and he's so experienced that he isn't tuned into anything new and maybe reacts in a way of where experience actually can be detrimental. I mean, I'm just saying there's always the other side of the coin. You know, yeah, it's great to have someone who's experienced, but then you got someone, Hillary, who's so experienced in the corruption and hiding things. That's not good either.
Well, I agree with that. Hiding things in corruption, and you know, we certainly have considerable expertise on corruption in the District of Columbia because we've had several councilmen go to jail and people resign and all sorts of things. I mean, you know, it's like Judge Roy Bean out here in the Wild Wild West. You know, we've really lately, you know, there's been a lot of corruption here. So, yeah, I agree that. There is another side to the coin, but when the plane's going down, I think you're going to change your tune. I think you're going to want the guy that was the pilot.
Maybe you want the guy who was the stunt guy. Maybe you want him to teach you the stunt guy in a movie, and he'll teach you how to be able to fall.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because the pilot probably got you into trouble in the first place.
Well, maybe that's true. Because he was asleep on the job.
Drinks.
If there's somebody out there that disagrees, come on, call us. Let us know how you feel. So still, you haven't answered the question there, Madam Feminist. Who do you see on the to replace Hillary? And isn't that what happened last time? I mean, what happened last time was that this guy, Neil Axelrod, who was Obama's campaign manager, recognized that people were supporting Hillary Clinton, and we all thought she had it in the bag, remember?
Right.
And people were supporting her because there wasn't an alternative. And he brought Obama up through the ranks, you know, because let's not forget that Barack Obama was a one-term United States senator, and he brought him onto the national scene and pushed him through the caucuses and other things because I think he realized that if he could produce a good candidate, people would switch. And I think that's true today as well. So who's your good candidate that you're going to produce so that people switch from supporting Hillary?
I know. It's when you think about it, that he was just a first-termer, it is pretty amazing. He made it. So there you go. He was a guy who didn't have much experience, right?
Yeah, but he had political experience.
Wow. You know, I mean, and I think that's why people like Donald Trump, because people are tired of electing people whose resumes say, I was a politician. That's what I do. I have political experience. They don't want a politician. They want some businessman. They want somebody who's run a huge international corporation.
But what happens when you go bankrupt? There's no going bankrupt. What happens when you're in the White House and you go, oh, my bad. Guess I got to go bankrupt.
No, but I think that people think the government is already bankrupt. And already in so much debt based on the politicians that, you know, hell, maybe they're going bankrupt. They find a loophole for us that would get us out of this. I mean, I see, you know, I think it's amazing just all the things he says. I mean, what did he say when he said about, you know, everyone's got to go? Everyone's going to go. I don't know how you physically do that.
Yeah.
And I would think that, you know, my problem with that is that I know a lot of kids who are those dreamers and have served their country and are more patriotic by the United States than kids that have been born with, you know, generations in the United States. So, you know, I don't think that's
okay. Well,
the
look,
best thing.
We finally got somebody to call in and argue with you. We have Clementine on line
okay.
three.
All right,
Clementine, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
And do you think Kathleen is crazy?
No.
Do you have a question?
No, I personally think she's absolutely right, and it's because I want a Democrat to be the president next time, but I'm not sure I want Hillary.
So who do you want, Clementine, if you don't want Hillary? First, let me ask you why you don't want Hillary.
Because I think... Because she is rather venal. She is obtrusive. She is not a person that I would want to know, although I would like to meet her simply because she's got incredible experiences in her life. But I just don't trust that she would make a good president. Although I would love to have a woman president, I'm just not sure who is qualified. And although she is uniquely qualified, I don't know. There's just something about her that irks me.
Well, you know what? I get that sentiment from a lot of people, you know, and I think that is one of the big problems that she has, is I do get this sentiment that I'm not exactly sure why I don't like her, but I don't like her. And I think that's a problem, you know, that she has as many negatives as positives. So do you have somebody you do like that you want to see there besides me and Kathleen?
Well, you know, if it were you and Kathleen running, and I would like Kathleen on the top.
Thank you so much. That's absolutely right.
No, I'm not sure because I am not inspired by anybody that's running.
Yeah. Yeah, I think
you know, it's really sad when you've got that moron out there like Donald Trump, who's somebody that I sort of admired in the 70s and 80s. But what a jerk.
Yeah. And you know what? I think that is one thing about Obama. I think he was inspiring, and I think that helped him a lot. But thanks for calling in. We got another caller. Kathleen is inciting people all across America.
Bye.
So thanks, Clementine. Taboo's on line one. Taboo, are you there?
Yes, I am. Hi, everyone.
Hi.
Hi.
Okay, I got a couple of questions.
Okay.
First, do y'all remember the role that Hillary played in the Nixon scandal?
No.
You know, only
a lot of us haven't forgotten. Did she try to deny him rights? Huh?
Tell us about it. What was it?
I remember vaguely that she was part of the.
Yeah,
wasn't she part of the Warren Commission?
Well, let's see. I my memory doesn't. If I remember correctly, she had something to do with trying to deny Nixon counsel. She hid papers. If it's correct, all I know is what I hear and read. I don't know if it actually happened or not, but I thought there was talk that she tried to hide certain legal cases to say that there was no precedent, you know, the cases that had already existed.
I don't remember that, but I remember she was a lawyer on the Warren Commission, not on the Warren Commission, on the Watergate. I keep on saying the Warren Commission, which was Kennedy, investigated the Kennedy assassination. What I really mean is the Watergate hearing. She was a counsel on the Watergate hearing, so that could be true. I just don't remember it.
Okay, but what one other thing I question, I know you don't have much time. Senator Brown, just wondering, do you like the way the country is going, being against Trump? I think Trump is not what people are looking at Trump because people are looking for someone to save our country. Now, I guess my question is, do you think the country is in trouble?
I think yes. I think on many levels the country is in trouble. I think we're still a great nation. But I think there's certainly problems. And you know, I think that we started out the show with the idea that we were going to talk about Ferguson because we had a man from Ferguson who was supposed to be on. And I think, yes, when I look at Ferguson, when I look at Baltimore, when I look at New York, when I look at that terrible tragedy in South Carolina.
But that's more from a these are those kind of historical conflicts that we've had, the skin color thing. Actually, we have a pigmentocracy when it's all based on this color thing. But I'm looking beyond that.
Tell me what you think the problem is, Taboo. It's more important to know what you think is the, you know, our problems. What do you think?
Well, I think there are treasonous. We have treasonous, and you don't hear the word treason even mentioned in the government. There are certain things that looks like to me that is deliberately being done to abrogate or to somehow dissolve our sovereignty. Look at the debt. Who would allow a country to get in so much debt?
Let me tell you a story. I want, and I believe what you're saying. It's not like we want to believe in conspiracies, but I think there is some kind of deep-rooted, systematic thing that happens within the bureaucrats or something. For instance, my son is working for a young company. The guy was 30 years old. It's internet security, how to protect yourselves from employees stealing from you, but also from hackers and all that type of thing. They've become very successful. Guess who's buying them out? The Chinese. And guess who just gave them permission to? The United States of America gave the Chinese permission to buy a company that's United, you know, here in the United States, American born, whatever, and it's all about internet security, and they allow them to buy it. To me, well, it's like that's what you're kind of talking about, isn't it?
Yes, and that's what many people are concerned about. That, and
Yeah, I'm sorry, Tapu. I didn't mean to cut you off, but I think you're right.
Okay. Yeah. Well, you know, but these are things that's related. And it's about saving our home. If you look at our culture, our way of life, it is changing so drastically.
Well, you know, the only thing that I would disagree with the two of you about is that there's some kind of conspiracy. I think, you know, what happens is that we, you know, you turn over the government to me. I'm the new president. All of a sudden, I have $5 trillion, and I have expectations about it, you know, expectations on what I should do. But that's not my money. And at the end of 8 years, it's somebody else's money, and it's somebody else's problem. So I kick the can down the road as a politician instead of stand. And I think that's our biggest problem is a lack of courage. You know, again, we started out the show this morning, today, by thanking these three great, these three veterans who stood up and saved those people on the train. I think we need more of that in our politics. That
Well, when you talk about lack of courage, where though, Senator Brown?
Sorry
for cutting in, but when you talk about lack of courage, I mean, that's, we're talking about in the system. They're servants outside of the system. The problem is inside of the system. What's wrong there? The people who are controlling it now. I never said that was a conspiracy. I'm looking at mere facts.
Yes, me
and
too.
I don't think
thank
that's
you,
conspiratorial. Tibu. I'm merely looking at the facts.
Yes, so, well, and there are facts. It's factual. Can't call it a conspiracy if it actually happened, and I know that it happened because the company was sold to by the United States. Agreed, it's okay to sell this company that can help Americans and companies and internet hacking, and they sell it to the Chinese who just hacked. I don't know how many people.
Well,
sold.
But
that's
you
not
know,
you know.
Taboo knows that this is true because Taboo is an old friend of the show who calls in from time to time, and he's from Washington, D.C. And he knows that he lives in the nation's capital, and still only about 50% of the registered voters show up for an election. Only about 50% of us take enough time to show up on the first Tuesday after the first Monday in November and vote. And this is a town that lives on politics, and that's 50% of the registered voters, not 50% of the eligible voters. And I think that's a big problem, is that we're all asleep at the wheel. We're
well,
not
a lot
involved.
Of times people, a lot of times people are saying, "What? Why should I vote? Doesn't make any difference. We even voted for statehood. Didn't make no difference.
I know.
We voted to say, look, our children don't even can't even get jobs to work anymore, our entry-level jobs. You know, people, you talk earlier about, you know, people come in picking the crops. Well, what about entry-level jobs? Children don't learn the basic skills of, you know, disciplines of going to work and stuff like that. Jobs that used to babysit, cut grass, wait tables, and all that. Look who's got the job right here in our city right now.
Well, Taboo, we have to leave, but thanks for your input. And let me just say that I expect to resolve our statehood issue and become a state, because I know there are people like you out there working on it. And if we could just get about 20 more taboos on the case, I think we could get the job done. So okay. Thanks for calling in, and thanks for being a long-term statehood supporter, Taboo. I know you've been involved in the movement for a very long time, and you work hard for it, and there's other volunteers out there to do the same. So, America, join us next week and help me straighten Kathleen out.
We'll get you on the right track if there's a politician inside the Beltway. We'll deprogram you.
And you know what? I think that's really the key word here is the right track. So all you liberals out there on the left track, please call in. But thank you, America. Thank you, Clementine. Thank you, Taboo. And thank you, Kathleen. We'll see you next week.
Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote.